Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I have started the recording.
Thank you, Benedetta. We have Paul Diaz on the line from the Registrar Constituency, Barbara Steele Registry, James Bladel Registrar, Mike Rodenbach, Business Constituency, Mark Trachtenberg from IPC, Michael Collins, Business Constituency, Adam Eisner, Registrar, Stephen Vine, Registrar, and Kevin Erthmann from ITC. Then we have for staff, Marika Konings, and Olaf Nordling, and myself.
Excellent. Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, everybody, good morning, and thank you for being so prompt. Thank you also, everyone, for providing the statements of interest. It's really great having that administrative thing taken care of right away. For the call today, we have a couple of administrative type things I would like to first address, and then we can move to the charter questions. If you've all seen on the wiki site, Marika and Glenn and others have been very helpful in posting up a couple of things that we need to discuss today, or at least begin discussing. If you can see on the wiki, at the very top are documents for discussion at today's conference call. We have two things there. A template for the constituency statements, potential template that we've put together, as well as a draft schedule for this working group. And I don't really mind which one we address first. They're going to be interrelated, and I think we're going to cross over, but for the group, I have a general question, please, and we'd like to get the discussion started here. As the schedule has been set out and or the template for constituency statement, it is currently envisioning that the various constituencies would provide preliminary inputs fairly early in our process. In other words, it looks like we're asking our colleagues to provide their views on the three questions before us sort of in parallel as we're going through them ourselves. And the draft timetable reflects that we would solicit these and try and get the statements back by mid to third week of next month in order to work towards a tentative goal of having our work done by end of October. Question I have for the group is, are you all comfortable with that approach, or would you prefer a more traditional, we work through the questions, have some preliminary proposals, address questions, and then put those thoughts to our constituency colleagues for their comments and inputs? I don't have a very strong feeling either way, and really would like to open it up to the group for discussion. Can you all still hear me?
Yes.
Very good. It is a strange feedback sound. Is everybody else getting that?
Yes.
Okay. If you did hear me, thoughts then on the where in our timeline, at what point we solicit our colleagues in the various constituencies' inputs on the questions that are before this working group?
This is Mark Trachtenberg. I guess I would be of the opinion of sooner rather than later, only because In my constituency, in my experience, that people have many opinions.
Sure.
And so it would be helpful to collect those opinions early on in the process as opposed to later on when we're closer to a final work product, trying to incorporate those many different opinions into the final work product, I think would be more difficult.
Okay.
This is Olaf. I would concur with that based on past experience where, although we set time limits, there have been delays in delivery of the constituency statement, so I think it's a good thing to give them as much time as possible to come to a consolidated statement from the constituency.
Thank you. Good point, Olaf. Barbara?
I just basically wanted to add that I concur. I believe that, you know, given the number of members in our constituency and the matters at hand before the constituency at this time, that we would want to put it forward to them sooner rather than later.
Very good. Since this seems to be consensus around this, is there anybody who feels that it makes more sense to seek the inputs later in the process? Or are we in agreement? Okay, that's fine. Then the draft timeline that has been sketched out, it fits nicely with you know what's been suggested. So I'd ask if you all have it available, if you can pull up, open up the template for these constituency inputs. And it's going to look very familiar to everyone since, you know, it repeats in large degree the charter questions, and the format is laid out in a very easy to understand manner, as is typical for these processes. Of course, we have three questions before us, so it's presented as issues 1, 2, and 3. And if you all can see that on the first issue, the red text right now, I will admit, is mine. And what we're noting here, the question asks, or it says right now that, you know, the constituent responses do note that this should not include any proposed policy change affecting WHO's policy, as it is outside the scope of this PDP. And just wanted to let the working group know that I have contacted the chair and vice chair of the GNSO just to make sure that that was an accurate statement, and they have concurred. Both of them have told me that they said they felt that this working group recommending changes to WHO's policy is outside of our mandate. That's just sort of the one highlight I wanted to make sure the group. I think for the benefit of everybody, it might be easier. You know, we still have a little time, and as far as the seeking the comments, finalizing this template, we don't have to do this until next week's call. So an action item for all of us, please, would be to go to the wiki, to look at the draft. If there are any things that you would like to see changed and whatnot, to please make those changes, or you can send me a note, or Marika a note, and we will make those changes for you. And then at next week's call, let's agree to the final text that we can then start passing around to our constituency colleagues to get their inputs. Is that accessible to everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Hi, Paul. This is James. Yes, James.
Question. Is it possible to modify this document so that it is not stored as a native Word document and we can edit it directly on the wiki? Otherwise, I'm concerned that we'll have different versions floating around.
Very good point. Anybody on the staff that might have more familiarity with the wiki setup, can we do that easily enough?
Perfectly doable.
Over. All right. Then, taking James' advice, that's a very good point. We'll make a section, we'll call it the draft constituency template. Basically, move that document down and make it part of the wiki text, so it's easy for everyone to see and to input any edits, suggested changes, etc.
Okay.
Fantastic. Okay, then. Those were, if you will, the administrative issues we had to get through. We'd then like to turn to our charter questions. As we discussed last week, we just thought we would take them in order. Is everybody still comfortable with that, or is there perhaps questions that have been posed, number two or three, that you would really strongly prefer to start with? All right, then. Then, you know, we'll start from the top. The question before us was, could there be a way for registrars to make the registrant email address data available to one another? Again, per the guidance from JNSL Council, changes to whois are, those sort of things are beyond this working group's mandate. However, we do have a proposal from James posted to the list talking about using James, why don't you explain your idea so I don't put words in your mouth?
I wouldn't claim or presume to think it's thought out thoroughly enough to be an idea or a proposal at this point, more just kind of a written musing. But it was the idea that I think that the, thinking outside the lines a little bit, the poll message system that right now is somewhat of a one-way conduit of information between registries and registrars, could conceivably be modified to facilitate a very limited inter-registrar communications. If registrars had the ability to create poll messages for one another, that might be a both authenticated and secure channel for the transfer of this kind of information. And I just wanted to throw that out for the group to discuss.
Do others have thoughts? Have you had an opportunity to reflect on the proposal?
Well, this is Kevin Erdman. One thing that springs to my mind on this particular question relates to the contractual relationship between the registrant and the registrar being under a particular national law, which would also govern how its information was purveyed, and opening this up to other registrars who may be in other jurisdictions and have other national laws control would put an additional, you know, complication to that whole contractual relationship between the registrant and the registrar. Sorry.
That's excellent. Yeah, I'm taking notes, so if I pause, just please bear with me for a second. Ben, there's a very keen insight. I would ask the group, it strikes me on first blush that this is moving us back into the whole who is type debate realm, and so I would ask, given the guidance that we have, does that mean that the group feels that James's proposal would perhaps bring us into another area? Is this something that we need to seek some guidance on? What does everybody think?
Paul, this is James.
Please, James.
Are we assuming that... probably going to torture this question a little bit, so bear with me. Are we assuming that the registrant email address is not present in the whois data block associated with a domain, or is it necessarily outside of that, or can it be in both places? I mean, do we have any assumptions or scenarios that we're using to chase this question?
A fair question, not just for me, for the group. My response, James, would be that the registrant email is not a required output field in Whois. Of course, that information is collected by registrars, but they're not required to publish it. And so the assumption that I had is to assume that it's not there, that it's not publicly visible right now. Some registrars do publish it, but again, it's not a requirement. So therefore, to assume that it would not be there. Other thoughts?
This is Kevin again. My impression is that it's fairly typical these days for the actual registrant's email address to not appear in the public records, or the publicly accessible records, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a big issue.
Any other thoughts? Okay, James, then I guess based on Kevin and my views on it, I think it's fair to assume that that data field is not in the publicly available Whois. It's fair to assume that.
So then, building on that a little bit and going back to touch on Kevin's concern, would that kind of blending the two together, if we used a secure and authenticated exchange, which would be in this case the transfer or registrant initiated transaction, would that satisfy some of the data disclosure issues, because it is not necessarily the EPP and the poll messages are not a public, publicly accessible communication channel.
Well, this is Kevin again. I think that answers the question from, I would say the obvious privacy question, but it doesn't necessarily totally resolve the question, because the contractual relationship between the registrant and the registrar is more than just the privacy concern. What I would think is that the biggest potential problem would be if these email addresses are more readily available than they already are, then it would be easier for folks that do the hijacking to get relevant information to be able to perform those transactions.
That's a good point, Kevin.
A very good point, Kevin. I mean, security concerns, we don't necessarily want to make the system any more insecure than it might already be. James, if you're aware, or anybody else, the poll message, just the mechanics of it, how, to follow up on Kevin's point, how readily available, accessible, I should say, is that? Have there ever been instances where that database or that mechanism has been hacked in some way? Would we be opening up a Pandora's box if we were to approach James, take up James's approach and try to use it as a conduit for sharing this sensitive data point, the registrant email, or is it a pretty secure system that is sort of immune to potential hijacking attempts or other bad actions?
And I would defer that question to Barbara and some of the other folks from the registry constituency. My initial reaction is that it's fairly secure, but as far as any previous history of issues with that or known vulnerabilities, I would stay away from it.
Is there anyone who can elaborate on the actual mechanics of the pull message?
To my understanding, the pull message exists in the provisioning system between the registry and the registrar. It is a secure system that a registrar must authenticate to. In some cases, there are multiple layers of authentication in order to create or renew or transfer some of the basic operations that someone can perform on a domain name. And it is the edge or the front end for a registry like VeriSign or some of the others. All the registrars would connect to this. The pull message system is a means by which the registry can create messages for the registrar and put them in their mailbox, essentially, on this system so that a registrar can get messages from the registry. And my proposal is that registrars would, this system would be extended to allow registrars to leave messages for one another.
Does the existing system, the messages that are provided, are they just predefined discrete pieces of data, or are they in some cases freeform text?
I think they're XML, so that and I'm a little nervous about saying what can and can't be done easily, but I think that they're XML so that they can be readily extended to include a text block or something that conforms to a field schema. But that's just a swing at this point.
So under your proposal, would the registrar send the email address to the registry in through this system, and then the registry would then forward it on to the gaining registrar? Or,
yes.
Or are you proposing that the system somehow be extended so that the communication goes directly from the losing registrar to the gaining registrar?
I think both of those methods are acceptable and on the table, but in either case, the registry system becomes the intermediary.
I mean, it would seem that going through the registry would be, you know, one, not only more secure, but two, would require less build-out of the system.
Well, that's where I would ask Barbara to chime in.
Yeah, this is Barbara. You know, quite honestly, I, from a technical perspective, really don't have insight into it, but maybe what we should do, I could probably find somebody on our technical team to perhaps attend our meeting next week to answer some of these questions.
Or
I'm really not comfortable, you know, speaking to how it technically works.
Do you think, in the meantime, before the next meeting, maybe that person could put together a brief document? Post it to the wiki, that way we could have a better understanding before the meeting and make a better use of our time on the call.
Sure.
Yeah,
let me engage someone from our technical team to do that. So basically we're just looking for the functionality of the pull messages and how easily we would be able to extend that to allow messages to be passed either directly between registrars or from one registrar to another via the registry. Is that a correct assessment?
I think that's correct, Barbara. Right now, the pull message system is a one-to-one between the registrar and registry, and it is a unidirectional channel from the registry to the registrar, so there's really no way for a registrar to send a message back to the registry using this system.
Right.
So either case would require some significant extensions or enhancements to the system.
Okay. All right, so let me see what I can find out, and I'll have some information posted to the wiki this week.
And Barbara, Paul, I would ask
a question on this.
Sure, please go ahead.
So, I guess even if this would work, is there a problem that some registrars collect this piece of data and others do not?
Well, I think pretty much every registrar collects the data. I don't think it's a matter of collection. It's just a matter of display.
Okay. I believe that's correct, Eric. Kevin, excuse me. I believe that's correct. that it needs to be collected. Some registrars may, I know we call it a primary contact.
Mm-hmm.
That's synonymous with registrant, but that's a critical data field. We currently do not publish it because it is critical, but we definitely have it.
Okay, so I want to go back also to the scoping issue. You know, with complete respect for what Avery and Chuck might have told you, Paul, I don't know exactly what you asked them, and questions to the council really ought to be going through me. And I think that who is was specifically mentioned in this request, and the notion that, you know, making a piece of data that is collected by everybody, you know, publishable in the who is record is not necessarily, you know, outside the scope of this group. So I just want to leave that on the table and not completely discount it. I didn't know it was a piece that was in fact collected by everybody. That definitely makes a difference in my thinking on this.
Even if it was published, though, I mean, I don't know if that really, I don't know how relevant it really is to this discussion, because that presupposes that there'd be some type of manual review process for the transfers where the registrar could, you know, access the WHOIS data and then verify it. Whereas I think, and what we're looking at is more of an automated process.
Through this other tool.
I mean, that was my understanding. I don't know.
It should be fine. I'm also a little concerned. I don't understand why you would collect what you call a primary email address, you know, at Network Solutions, and yet not publish it. But then you collect something called an administrative email address, which everyone in the world believes is the primary email address, and you publish that. You know, what happens when they're different?
I think that's part of the issue.
That's very often the issue.
I think it's a big part of the issue. We need to dive into a little bit and not be frightened about a scoping issue.
All right.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it's not so much being frightened of the scoping issue, just more that there's obviously a lot of conflict having to do with who is, and despite numerous attempts, people have not been able to change anything about who is. And
so
if we start going in that direction, we're likely to be stuck in that quagmire as well. And so we might be better served by trying to find alternatives to enforcing public display of this information, when it seems like there may be some other technical possibilities for achieving our goal of expediting and making more efficient the transfer process.
I agree completely. We should look at all alternatives. I just don't want to take any alternatives off the table on the second call for reasons that I don't quite understand. I don't see why this particular small issue within the whole who is, you know, realm needs to put us off track. You know, I don't think we need to get into the broader debate. I just need to discuss, you know, whether it's a viable alternative or not, and then leave that up to others.
Well, I guess the question I would have for you is if who is were within the scope, and we were to recommend display of the registrant address, how would that really facilitate a more efficient transfer process?
And that is a totally fair question. I don't know the answer to that right now. But it seems to me that seems to be the piece of information that if everybody had it, this process would go a lot smoother.
And I think that's the whole point of our questions are, you know, how can we provide this information without necessarily going through who is? How can we ensure that only the necessary parties have access to this information for the sole purpose of expediting transfer and ensuring that transfer is actually legitimate? And so I think that's a separate question from whether it should be displayed and who is, because I don't see how public display of the information at all helps the transfer process. In fact, it could be detrimental to the transfer process because it gives bad actors access to the information.
Right, but, you know, at the moment, okay, I can see this quickly devolving into a who is debate, maybe.
I'm for public display of all information. Who is?
Okay, well,
but
so
I,
am I.
But
that's not where we're at today.
Yeah, but for the purpose of this working group, you know, I think that is a little outside of the scope of our question.
Yeah. This is Paul, and wearing my network solutions hat, I would just say that, you know, when it comes down to what goes into who is, there will always be the trade-off between convenience and security. And I think, you know, requiring, making the registrant email, which basically trumps everything else, publicly available is going to open up tremendous security concerns. Putting the chair's hat back on, Mike, what I would ask is, and believe me, I want this process to be totally transparent, and I hope I didn't step on any toes not going through you. I just, because I've never done this before, had asked Chuck and Aubrey a very high-level question. But if, you know, if you have a concern or you know, would like to take it up with the council, as council liaison, please, by all means, why don't we, you know, take that initiative and come back to the group. You know, if you can define the issues in such a way, maybe you will get a different answer. It just, again, in the broad way that I had asked, you know, they both came back and felt that it was beyond the mandate of this working group, but so that there's no concerns that, you know, we're unnecessarily cutting off potential avenues for discussion. By all means, go back to them and then let us know if they have a different view.
Right. Thanks, Paul. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not wedded to specific process on this. I just don't want us closing off avenues at the outset of a working group that don't necessarily need to be closed off.
All right, and Barbara, if I can, coming back, whichever of your colleagues you may speak to, I guess for the benefit of the working group as well, when you ask them, you know, to put something together on the wiki about the mechanics of the pull message and everything, if you would also have them please have in mind or begin to address the level of effort, what level of effort there might be involved. Are there any changes that might need to be instituted, et cetera, so that if we, as a group, think that this is a good idea and pursue it as a recommendation, that we're also sensitized to, okay, it's something that can be done, but I'm just making this up. It's going to take 6 months for the engineers to write some new code or something. Whatever that may be, it might take 6 hours. On the other extreme, whatever, that we at least are sensitive to the sort of impact any recommendations we may make, what they'll mean for the real world.
Okay, I can definitely do that. And what I may do is, you know, put forth these questions to the constituency, asking for volunteers from any of the registries that may be there, you know, absent any, you know, and also I can volunteer up some people as well. But I just want to make sure that, you know, any of the registries have the opportunity to speak to this.
Excellent.
Okay.
Yeah, much appreciated. Because at this point, all GTLD registries are using EPP. Is that correct?
I am not 100% certain, but I
think
feel
so,
that
right.
Most of them are, and I'll verify that as well.
Okay. Other thoughts, comments, or concerns on this proposal? Okay. Then we'll look forward to whatever feedback we can get next week, and we can. You can follow up. I guess as we've gone over this, has anybody else had any ideas, any other proposals, in addition to what James has put on the table, that we might address now? Okay, then. Then we'll look forward to follow up next week. And I guess now why don't we begin to touch on number two. The second question before the group, whether there is a need for other options for electronic authentication, suggestion being something like a security token in the FOA. Electronic authentication due to security concerns over the use of email addresses. So, I guess this one is asking us, does the working group believe there's a need for other things? And then the follow-on, if so, I guess some suggestions on what those electronic authentication things might be. If we break it down, take the first half, just as it's been proposed, whether there is a need for electronic authentication options due to security concerns.
This is Barbara. It's my understanding that any registry that's using EPP also requires the auth info code to accompany the transfer request from the registrar. So does that give us, I guess, an added layer of authentication? Or does anyone on the call feel that, you know, that would not be an adequate or appropriate solution?
Sorry, Barbara, could you just restate the solution again? Just the first part.
It's my understanding that any registry operator that is currently using the EPP protocol requires that a transfer request be accompanied by the auth info code. So the registrar would be providing that to us. We, of course, have that in our systems as well to authenticate the transfer as well. So would that not be an additional means of electronic authentication that would give us, I guess, the level of comfort that we're looking for here? Or does anyone, I guess, feel that that does not give us any additional security or comfort?
Barbara, this is James.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an excellent idea. My understanding of the auth info code would lead me to the opposite conclusion, which is that I would be concerned that it's a little too powerful and that registrants might get careless about it or might get out into the wild, and we would see a rise in things like domain hijacking, because that is, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe you can correct me on this, but that is the key that registries are looking for transfer or change of registrant or any of those types of operations. Is that correct? Or
I don't know that it's required for a change of registrant, but I do believe that it is required for, you know, change of registrar.
Okay, so I think it would be useful for our purposes, but I would be concerned about how we would handle that carefully to prevent it from becoming a vulnerability.
But I mean, that's already used.
I'm not sure
I understand your comment, James.
Well, it is out there, but I guess my question is that released to the registrant when they approve a transfer, Barbara? Or is that something, some other token that the registrar is passing, and then the auth info code never actually goes out to the registrar?
It's my understanding that the registrant, the registrar of record for a domain name has the auth info code. They're required to provide it to the registrant. The registrant would need that auth info code in order to initiate a transfer to another registrar. So they would provide that, I believe, in the request that they would submit to the registrar, the gaining registrar, and then it would be the gaining registrar that would, you know, pass that through to the registry when they're initiating the transfer.
Okay. And my apologies, I was under the impression those were two separate keys, but if they're the same key, then we're already using that. You're correct.
This is Paul, and let me put a question to the group. As I look at this, and I think I'm going to have to go back and read some of the archival information to better understand what the thinking was when this particular question was formulated, but it strikes me that problems that we experience, any registrar can experience in terms of attempts at domain hijacking, email is a vulnerable mechanism. And the question I have for the group is this question getting at email in general needing some form of electronic authentication, and then it necessarily carries to transfer requests? Or should it just be very narrowly viewed in, okay, some form of electronic authentication solely when a email, excuse me, when a transfer request is made? That's not clear. What I'm getting at is, so often when we have hijacking cases, it's because the admin contact email has been taken over by the bad guys. So they now control that email, they start the process, you know, the request process, and as we've just touched on, if they get access to the auth info code, the name is gone. They're able to move it out. So, again, I'm just looking at this and wondering if the question is just very narrowly focused on looking for ways to beef up security regarding the use of emails during transfer process, or is it trying to stretch the boundaries a little bit and seeking solutions or ways to make the emails more secure?
I mean, I think we have to look at it from the perspective, this is Mark Trachtenberg, I think we have to look at it from the perspective of just with regard to transfers. Otherwise, it's going to be clearly outside the scope of this working group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think additional security could be helpful. My concern is the cost of implementation.
Sure.
Which will be a concern mostly from registrars.
Ultimately, Mark, I agree with you wearing my network solutions hat. I just wanted to throw it out there because thinking about these security problems that is noted, you know, hacking, spoofing, et cetera, you know, those sorts of issues come up all the time and not necessarily only in a transfer request arena. But with that said, I agree. I think it's trying to deal with the inherent insecurity of a Hotmail account as your admin email is an issue beyond the scope of this group. Other thoughts or comments? Does anybody have any ideas on the question is posed?
Sorry,
is
Paul?
Yes, please.
Sorry, yeah, it's Mike Rodenbaum. I've got just an overall question on this issue here. So number two, the question is whether there is a need for other options. So I think we need to try to quantify what is the problem here. How often does this sort of thing happen, that email addresses are hacked and spoofed and domains are allegedly mistransferred?
Okay.
Seems to me to be a fundamental question in order to address whether there's a need. We need to know, well, whether there's a problem.
Mike and Paul, this is James.
Go ahead, James.
I'll take that as an action item. I know that we have a department that focuses specifically on these types of issues,
mm-hmm.
So maybe I can gather some data there.
And the thought.
This is, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
This is Michael Collins. I had wanted to add a little bit more specific request to Mike. That is that it seems to me there'd be a great deal of difference between what how you could use a hacked email address and a spoofed one. For example, if you could hack an email address, you might be able to gain access to the auth info code, because some registrars will email that information. And if you can receive email, you know, the admin email address email, then you could probably acquire that. So I think we have to be careful about using that as a authentication. But at least consider that. That's all.
This is Barbara. I can speak from VeriSign's standpoint because my team handles transfer disputes that arise and are filed with us for level one resolution. And since the policy was put in place in, I think it was 2004, we have received only, looks like, about 240 disputes over the course of that time, given the number of transfers that we process in any given month. I think it's a fairly low percentage of actual disputes being filed. And that also actually includes court orders that we may receive. So in actuality, actual disputes themselves are probably in the neighborhood of about 200. I cannot speak for how often an email address is spoofed and, you know, just a change of registrant is made where, you know, a registrar to registrar transfer did not accompany that. I don't know if that information is helpful or not.
Okay. Again, making notes, and it's certainly helpful, Barbara. It's an important data point. But James, if you can provide things as well, and any other data, I would suggest that we look at this again. We'll necessarily need to look at this again in a subsequent call. We might also want to make sure tweak the proposed template for the constituencies. And you know, solicit additional input there, other experiences, et cetera, to, you know, more fully flesh out what the markets have to deal with.
I think we also want to make sure that we specify and emphasize here that we're only discussing inter-registrar transfer and not change of registrant.
Yes, very good point.
Because I think if we don't do that, we're going to get many, many opinions and many, many long comments about the problems with registrar change, as opposed to what's within the scope of our working group, which is just transfer between registrars.
Very good point.
Yep. Okay. And to that end, when we post our template to the wiki, let's please everybody take a look and make sure that we have tight language and that it is very clear that we're not seeking anything beyond the mandate of this particular working group. Okay, all. By my watch, we have about 8 minutes left before the top of the hour. I put it to the group, do we want to begin discussing number three, or is this a decent place to break? We can circle back the follow-up information we're trying to gather for one or two and then really focus on three on our next call. What do people prefer?
I think just briefly on number three, we ought to maybe make an effort, which I think we kicked off in the last call, to also, you know, put facts around that.
Okay.
Is there a really large demand for partial bulk transfer?
Mike, this is James. I am in the process of gathering some data, and I've been speaking with some of our folks here internally, and I'm curious as to one of the questions they've put back to me is what threshold constitutes a bulk? Is it 100? Is it 10,000? Is it somewhere in between, I imagine?
I mean, that's a really good question, too. Maybe if there was just data that kind of showed the on a plot, you know, the number of domains in any given transfer request, but I guess that's even hard to quantify because at the moment they all come in one by one, right?
Right.
So how do you know if it's 100 for one order, if it's spread over 2 days or whatever? You know? I understand what you're saying. Maybe that's just something we need to get from the constituencies, their views on whether...
One of the approaches that we're taking is trying to estimate how much time and effort is involved on the part of the registrant per transfer, and then what a reasonable amount of time commitment for transfer would be before they would want some sort of programmatic approach to a bulk transfer. But, you know, that's just a swing. We could be way off the mark there.
This is Barbara. Can I enter the queue?
Please, Barbara.
as far as the bulk transfer is concerned, I think we need to also be cognizant of what actually the definition of a bulk transfer is. Currently, as it's in the existing transfer policy, it's when a transfer is done and authorized by ICANN, authorizing the registry operator to transfer all of a portfolio from one registrar to another ICANN accredited registrar. It does not charge the six or whatever the transaction fee is for a transfer, and it also does not add an additional year to the term of the registration. So if we're talking about two different things and just the ability for, I guess, registrars to be able to submit multiple transfer requests in bulk to a registry for processing, I think that's one thing, but I'm not certain that that's necessarily what's intended when we're talking about a bulk transfer in this context.
I think that...
This is Michael Collins. I just wanted to concur that this using this bulk transfer was confusing to me, especially since the description didn't seem to fit.
Okay, this is Paul. I think it's certainly within our mandate to tighten the definition. And if it's controversial, we can always seek clarification from counsel, but it strikes me that we'll definitely need to firm up a definition of what are we talking about, what does partial mean, what does bulk mean, and to Barbara's point, the implication of transfers. If we're thinking of a beast along the lines of what currently exists, i.e. there are no fees involved or an extension of an added domain year, or it's just going to be a new beast, in which case fee would apply, the year is extended, et cetera. Those sorts of definitions are something that we, as a group, will need to more fully address.
I would also like to solicit some input from our colleagues in the registrar constituency to see if this is really a problem. If it's not really that much of an issue, then we don't have to address the other more complicated issues.
Fair enough.
I think also hearing from Mike Collins and his constituents in the ICA, people that have big portfolios. My experience with Yahoo, been managing a big portfolio, was our registrar handled all that. I gave him a list and it didn't take me any incremental time. So I just don't know if that's really the norm, though.
I mean, I think the question is the burden on the registrar, not so much the burden on the registrar or the domain owner. But then again, my question is, how big is that burden? I think that's why it'd be helpful to solicit that kind of information from the registrar constituency.
This is Michael. I think it really depends on, once again, how we're defining this. Both transfers, I think, are, by definition, as it's used now, a service to registrar to be able to close out, to be able to close the registrar or to be able to, for registrars to buy another registrar, for example, and want to just combine the portfolios into one registrar accreditation, that kind of thing. But if you're talking about making it easier for registrants to transfer large number of domain names from one registrar to another, it is problematic today. There are some registrars that make it difficult and to get the auth code or to complete the process, so that you could end up, if you wanted to transfer hundreds or thousands or, God forbid, tens of thousands of domain names from one registrar to another, you could be talking about hundreds of hours of time under the current process. So maybe there is a registrant issue for making transfer of larger groups of names easier. I'm just still confused a little bit about whether that's what we're referring to in our charter or not. I hope it is, but I'm not sure.
I mean, it seems to me safe to assume that's what we're talking about here, which doesn't mean that's right, but I mean it is. It is partial bulk transfers. And it does say transfers involving a number of names, but not the entire group of names held by the losing registrar.
For the benefit of a registrar, I hope, as opposed to a registrar. Because I think that there is a different incentive. Losing registrars are not necessarily incentivized to make the process easy and efficient.
That's an understatement.
This is Marika here. I just wanted to point out as well that both scenarios have actually been taken up in the template. Because, well, from our side, it wasn't clear which one was meant, so we basically included them both. So maybe there should be a question as well. Should both of them be in there, or is the working group deciding that it should be limited to one or the other?
Me too, Marika. Yeah, I was going to refer everybody to the draft that we currently have. And again, we will have this posted on the wiki so everybody can make changes, suggestions, comments, etc. But these scenarios have been envisioned, but there is the question of, are we talking about one, both? What do we want? And sensitive to Michael's point, definition, we have partial bulk transfer in quotations right now. That needs to be more firmly defined so people understand what it is that we're getting at.
This is Michael again. As an example of something that we might strive for is a practice that I know one registrar does, and that is if you can give them a list of domain names that you want to transfer out, and they will give you one opcode for that list of domain names. I don't know if that's something that we could require registrars to do. I suppose we could, but it does make it very convenient.
I would ask again, you know, is this really an issue for registrars in general and for registrants in general? If there's just a few registrants that have this issue, then I don't know that changing the policy is necessarily appropriate. You know, you could make the argument that that's just a cost of their doing business.
And this is James. I have to drop off here for another call, but I wanted to echo that sentiment and then reemphasize that we don't necessarily want to create policy that there are no technical or policy barriers to transfers at this point. We're just talking about a convenience and a issue for a very limited market segment, and I think that that's a takeaway from a competitive advantage for someone, a registrar that wants to develop a business model to serve that group.
And I think we should also consider the security implications as well. If you make it easier to transfer, to have a partial bulk transfer, you arguably make it that much easier for, you know, a bad actor to transfer 100 domains or 1,000 domains as opposed to one domain.
Yes. Yes, folks, I recognize James has to drop off others as well. We have used our hour. This
just a little housekeeping routine. I've now added a link to a wiki page with the template, so it's there.
Okay, thank you, Olaf.
Taking out the link to the Word document.
Mm-hmm. Very good. But in the recognizing the time, I think we need to draw this particular one to a close. Some of us have action items. Others, you know, I would ask, please keep thinking about the issues that we've discussed. We'll be following these up next Tuesday's call. Please go to the wiki and look at, in particular, what Olaf has just put up for us so that we can start tightening the template up, get it ready to get it out to constituencies, because clearly, with the range of views that just within the group we have, we're probably going to hopefully get a lot of good inputs from our colleagues. And the sooner we can feel good about getting that process underway, the better for all of us to have this a very meaningful PDP. So with that, I will thank you all for your time. We will have the call again at the same time next week, next Tuesday the 19th. And other questions or concerns, please reach out either on the public list or feel free to contact me directly. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.